Welcome to the Brew Drink Run podcast, brought to you by the only website that promotes brewing your own beer, consuming the best craft beers in the world, and then running off the calories, brewdrinkrun.com.
Welcome to episode 182 of the Brew, Drink, Run podcast. We're not dead yet. My name's Lee.
This is Keith.
I'm Raymond.
We did it, you guys. One more in the can. Thank you guys for listening to the Brew, Drink, Run podcast.
Buy some stuff at.
Oh, boy. Yep. I was going to ask you if you like the show to rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you grab a podcast, but there's no chance of that now, so I won't even bother. This is our big show. On our big show, we talk about running, we talk about home brewing, and we start every episode with a beer. Keith, what is it this week?
It's a beer called All the Boys. It's a milkshake IPA. It's brewed with mango and leche. I'm a little bit confused about the name of the brewery, though. There's something that I'm going to have a hard time pronouncing, Rami, something like that. But it also says that it's brewed and canned by Hive Mind Brewing Company in the small print. So I don't know if it's a contract brewed thing, but I'm not really sure how to pronounce the brewery. You might have, since you brought this in, might know a little bit better as to what that is.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of, it's Baramari.
Baramari.
I think
okay.
It's Baramari. Right. It does have that B-H-R starts off with. And I did look it up before we went there.
Okay.
And I believe it is Baramari.
Okay.
A sweet little spot in Nashville. They have a nice pub where you can come and eat and drink. Really nice bar inside. I think that, I don't know this for sure, so feel free to call it incorrect. But I think that Hive Mind and Baramari are the same thing.
I think
Hive Mind might be the bigger company.
They're doing business as is the other. Okay. Well, that makes sense. I was just curious because I was going, well, maybe I can read this a little better if I see it in a different font or something like that. And I was like, wait, nope, that's a different name. So
yeah, and because the B logo, the B with the hop, is all over everything, and so I think it's all related.
Kind of all related, right? Okay.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful place. So we'll talk more about the brewery in a second, but let's start with the beer that we have. Raymond, this is a fun can.
Yeah, it is. Let me see what it is.
It's really great. Can I see it?
All right. So, it is a fun can. We've got a young lady drinking a old-fashioned style milkshake. She's holding it in her hand, and she's got, I guess, it kind of looks like beer tattooed across her fingers, which is fun. And then she's got tattoos all over the place. And then in a kind of scripty font, All the Boys. And then I guess this is their logo.
With the B with the hop.
And very illustrative, very colorful, lots of greens and pinks and blues.
It's very, it's tattoo art. I mean, yeah, it's even got like the banners that you would get in a tattoo. And that's kind of what the wordage is put on. So
yeah, and it's a tall boy. It's a 16-ounce can with a wrap. Well, not even a full wrap, just a full label wrap.
It's kind of like a full sticker wrap, which looks a little bit better than some of the others that go partial. Yeah. And this looks like something that you would be a little more comfortable maybe selling out in the public as opposed to just as an in-house sale kind of thing, which I think a lot of breweries are doing that partial sticker wrap for just in-house only releases.
A little bit more finished than that look. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But there's still something about that sticker to me that in this case I like because it does feel like smaller batch stuff. You know, you're not going to pay for a full wrap or for a specially printed can for something like this. This was a menu item take-home offering that they had there and only had it in the 16-ounce cans and 4-packs. We've poured this into glasses. Raymond, what does All the Boys look like in a glass? I keep wanting to call it just milkshake or Kalis beer or whatever. What does All the Boys look like in a glass?
It is a super, super cloudy, yellowish, kind of nectarine-looking liquid, kind of thick. Didn't pour with much of a head and that still doesn't have one because, you know, they don't come back even after they...
It's so weird how like they just don't come back.
We have no magic spell to create that.
They're just nice, cloudy-looking fruity looking beer.
And Keith, it smells pretty great. I mean, if you like big, rich, tropical fruit, that mango-y thing, it really comes through.
Now, it doesn't say, I mean, there's a bunch of fine print, which I didn't read before we got started, kind of backstory, but you were saying that this is brewed with the fruit and lactose, so milk sugar, which I think is interesting because it does have both a fruity and a little bit of a creamy cream milk kind of aroma. There's just like a touch of it in there, but I kind of picked up on it, and I think I might have picked up on it even if I didn't know that was what they were kind of going for. But there is just that slight little kind of creaminess that, you know, lactose adds both in the aroma, and I assume it'll be there in the feel. So.
And I'll let you guys go ahead and take sips. It's hard to tell how thick this beer is going to be from looking at it because of how cloudy it is, too. And with a name of the Milkshake IPA, and I've seen this before on other beers, that kind of a thing. You do anticipate it being a little bit creamier. You guys have had a taste. What's your first impression?
The first thing that hits me is the feel.
Yep.
It has that initial just sort of smooth feel to it. Yeah. I do get carbonation on the back end, and so it has a tingle on the back end that definitely mixes with the bittering hops. And the fruit. I mean, the fruit is really up front and forward and nice, to me, a nice blend of the kind of sweet mango and that more little bit of the tart elements that you might get out of the leche. So I kind of like it.
Agreed. That's a great description.
So you were calling it, I've always called this lychee, so I don't know how you actually say it.
I was introduced to this by a coworker a long time ago when I worked up at Wax and Facts up in Atlanta. She was from South Africa. So she had a little bit of an accent. It wasn't hugely thick, but it had kind of a little bit of a British tinge to it. But she was trying to introduce us all to this fruit. You know, she's like, oh, it's a lychee is how she said it. Now, that doesn't mean that that's exactly how it's pronounced. That could have been her accent or her, you know, kind of version of English that she spoke. So I'm not sure that it's wrong to call it lychee or anything like that. I guess we probably could look that up in a dictionary or something and it might tell us. But I've always called it that because it was kind of an exotic fruit and that's how it was introduced to me. So that's how I've always pronounced it.
And it looks kind of like a strawberry-ish? Strawberry and a raspberry kind of sorted together?
Right, yeah. And there's kind of like an outer shell and the fruit's on the inside and the fruit is more of a kind of melon meets kiwi texture. I think it's a little bit seedy, if I remember correct. And it does have kind of like a sweet melony flavor, but maybe a little bit of tartness going on in there as well.
Yeah.
As if I remember. It's been a long time since I've had one, but I remember going, wow, this is really good, but I don't know about the effort of getting through the skin for what's inside, you know, kind of thing.
So. Yeah, we had Mamoncinos in Costa Rica, and I'm looking at pictures, and it's kind of similar. It doesn't have the little, it's not exactly the same, but that idea of the fleshy fruit with the pit kind of in the middle, and you have to kind of peel it to get to it. Yeah. The flavor on this, so you guys talked about the texture of the beer, the mouthfeel of the beer. It does have that creaminess, a little bit of an effervescence. It's not super sparkly, which I think also kind of lends to that more rolling flavor, rolling kind of flavor to it. And whether it's the fruit or the additional adjuncts or even the yeast that's used, the combination of all those really does have a refreshing tropical flavor in this.
Kind of like a fruit smoothie in a way that kind of refreshing. What's interesting to me is that on the can it says it's 45 IBUs, and I'm finding this in a nice way as an IPA, but rather bitter on the back end. So I was kind of surprised because I had seen that when we were looking at the just kind of browsing at the can, and then I was like, okay, well I shouldn't expect anything too bitter here, but there's a considerable amount of bitterness going on with this.
Yeah, it's fairly. I mean, I get. A distinctly resinous quality at the end. It's that kind of pine, sticky, a little bit dry finish to this. But it's really nice how it complements and works with the sweetness on the front of the beer. This is definitely, with a name like this or with a pedigree like this, when they tell you the high notes of what the beer is, you expect it to be a little bit more complex maybe, and it delivers on that.
Yeah, it's definitely got some some complexity. I think that for me, the bitterness and adds a nice balance, but for an idea of a milkshake beer, that little bit of the carbonation that comes through is mixing with that bitterness, and I think that if it wasn't as bitter, it would have more of that kind of smooth, sweet, creamy feel to it, which is you know, is kind of my opinion on the idea of going for a milkshake. But what's here is really nice. And if it didn't say milkshake, if it just said all the boys beer brewed with these things, I wouldn't even think about that. So it's just that word milkshake that's kind of making me feel like that doesn't exactly work.
Yeah.
But what's there works for me. So when I can take a step back and just look at the quality of the beer, I really love all the elements and how they play together. Like the balance is nice. You know, I do like the balance for an IPA.
And that hot bitterness for me is really what makes this read as a beer too.
To
be honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do have a little bit of that effervescence and a little bit of some of the sweetness that you could attribute to the malt. But without that, if it was just that sweet tropical note all the way through, I don't know how much of a beer would really read, but that the hops just make it undeniable.
Well, I mean, I think this has a lot of what's going on with this, I think, is what's really popular with those, you know, hazy New England style IPAs that are kind of all the rage right now, is the fact that they don't actually add bittering hops into those beers. They just add, you know, the aromatics and the flavor hops, and they're all super fruity. And they're not as bitter, and they're kind of hazy, which is kind of what we're getting here. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, that's really what's popular right now. So when you say, to make it read like a beer, you know, like those, but that's kind of what those beers are all about, is just being super fruity juice bombs. And I think you took the hops out of this. That's kind of what you'd have with a little bit creamier mouthfeel, you know, so.
So I did mention that I had a chance to go to Bahramari and eat and sample their beers. I was in Asheville for a work conference. And if you've been to Asheville, Bahramari is down near where the Wicked Weed brew pub is. There's kind of a nice little centralized area.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff down there. Burial and a couple other breweries.
It's all there's a great little triangle just to places that you can park and walk. One of the great things about Bahramari is they do have their own parking in the back.
A nice,
decent-sized parking lot. Makes it super easy. They have a large deck on the back as well.
Okay.
So it's kind of tiered. If you want to eat, you sit up top or you go inside. And then there's, like, drinking decks, you know, lower that, you know, don't have table service or whatever. So you can go get your beer from inside and come back out.
Yeah.
Sit, play games, hang out. We were there in the middle of the week, maybe Wednesday, and it was doing really well. Just on a Wednesday for dinner time crowd. And it was a nice mix of people who had come after work. You know, there were several long tables with people who obviously worked together who were coming after work for a drink. And then you had people who just, you know, walked over from the neighborhood and were just sitting down and having a drink. So nice crowd, nice mix of people. That was good. And we had a couple of flights. And so we drank through, between my wife and I, we had maybe 12 of their beers.
Okay.
Samples while we were there. And we're impressed with all of it, really. Yeah. I mean, and I don't know a lot about their backstory, but they talk about their beers being chef-inspired, and it seems like I read someplace that this is one of those breweries that was actually started by someone more with a food background necessarily than a beer background. And so a lot of the combinations were fairly unexpected and weird. And, like, this I thought would be kind of gimmicky, you know, the milkshake, lychee, mango, IPA. But it turned out to be really good, and everything I went into it with, this is a smoked farmhouse with whatever weird thing in it. I was like, this is going to be gimmick. It was great, you know, and they surprised me over and over again. But one of their regular release beers that comes out in six pack is a Black Goza, and that one was really fun too. It had all of the classic kind of Goza mouthfeel and the saltiness and the briskness, but it is black as night in a glass. It's a neat sensation. It's like, you know, when you have like trick food, you know, it looks like something else, and there's a really interesting brain play with that.
Well, I mean, like those blonde stouts. You look at it and you drink a blonde stout and you kind of go, I guess it kind of is like a stout, but if you kind of clear your mind and close your eyes and don't look at the glass and what you're drinking when you drink those, you're like, yeah, this is all stout, you know, and it's a sort of trick of the mind and, a pretty solid brewing technique to be able to get the right flavors out of different malts, you know?
Yeah. Their three year-rounders are an IPA, which is good, their Black Goza, and a Sour Pale. Those are their three all-the-time beers.
I mean, to have a Black Goza as a year-round is it's ambitious. But, I mean, in a town like Asheville, I think that you can totally get away with that. And, you know, if... I don't know how far they plan to distribute and grow, or how even long they've even been there. But when you're talking about, you know, North Carolina, especially Asheville in general, I think you can get away with stuff like that in a place like that. You don't need your basic cores necessarily to carry you.
Well, it's crazy because we were leaving town and stopped on the edge of Asheville at a gas station just to fill up. And we walked in, and there was a display, and there was their Black Gozer right there in the gas station. I was like, all right.
There you go.
You know, it was unfortunately a little bit cheaper there than it was
at the brewery.
But, you know, hey, got to make a buck. I'm not gonna hate on anybody for that. But Asheville was nice. It's always nice to go up and visit, and there are just always more things to check out, it seems, every time I go.
Yeah.
And with my propensity to stop patronizing places once they get bought out, it's like, hey, I've got even more reason to go check out maybe Lexington Avenue, which I went to, which is a place I haven't been before, or the Oyster House, which is just a small brew pub there that our friend Corbin used to be a brewer at.
Okay.
And so had a chance to go there and check out some of those places where before I may have been tied up at some of the bigger names, it was really nice to spend some time and maybe dig a little deeper and see what Asheville has going on.
They have a lot to offer, for sure.
For sure. Well, we're not drinking lychee mango milkshake IPAs like all the boys. We are trying to make our own beer once in a while. Hey, Raymond, how's your brew house coming?
I've been working on the water lines all week.
It's important. You need water.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the main ingredients in beer, I understand.
Do you want to tell your water story?
No.
Okay. Great. I picked up, if you've been following along to Brew Drink Run the last couple of weeks, you know, I've got a beer coming up. I'm going to be brewing a pumpkin saison for our upcoming Halloween party. I'm not going to play Monster Mash this week. Sorry if you missed that last week. Go back and don't listen to last week's episode. I picked up those ingredients, all grain batch, picked up, you know, like 12, 13 pounds of malts, and picked up my hops, and gonna make a run by the grocery store and get the last few things, the pumpkin puree, the cloves.
Where are you doing your shopping?
Here in town. This was the Savannah Homebrew shop. This is my boy Gerald.
Yeah.
Gerald's great because it's all the convenience of online ordering, and that you basically, if you go to the Savannah Homebrew Shop's website for locals, otherwise just tune this part out. If you go to their website, there's a contact form. There's no, you know, online catalog of things. He basically encourages you to paste your recipe into the contact form box, and he just sends you an email back, tells you if he has it, and if he doesn't, tells you what he'll sub for it. And tells you when to come get it. And you show up. It's already in a bag ready to go home for you. And you just pay and head home. It's pretty convenient, all things considered. You don't have to wait for shipping. And somebody else does all the hard part and mills your grains and gets everything ready for you. Puts it all in a nice little package. It's, you know, DIY, you know, kits kind of in a way. You send him what you want to make and he makes it happen. And he'll tell you if you need a recipe. He's got all the recipes. They are in his head.
It's right there on the website,
and I don't think he's joking, really. So so there's that. I'm looking forward to doing that. We will try not to burn the hops in the hop sock. We will maybe, both of you guys will be there at the Halloween party, so maybe we'll pull out a quick recording, and we will, you will. Stop shaking your head. You'll be there.
Be out of town.
Oh, yeah, you're not going to be there. Your family will be there. We'll pull out a quick...
Everyone but you will be there.
Recording and maybe do some tasting notes at the party if we're in any condition to do that, which we probably won't. Keith, what's been going on at service lately? I know Great American Beer Fest just wrapped.
That was wrapped, and let's see. So we're kind of regrouping after that. We are working on trying to get our smaller system up. So we purchased a 3-barrel brew house, and we have three 10-barrel fermenters and one 10-barrel bright, and they're in place where they need to be plumbed in, so they need to be plumbed into the glycol, and we need to get the steam plumbed into the brew house. Once that's done, we can passivate everything and get going. So I'm looking forward to starting that up and having some larger small batches to deal with. I think it'll be a lot easier when it comes to things like carb. Is much easier to carbonate a bright tank than to kind of force carb a keg, you know, which is kind of what we're doing at this point. And there's little things that'll become easier, and we can get a little bit more volume out there. And you know, and I think it'll be fun to have beers that are around for a little while and give more people a chance to try them, as opposed to things lasting a weekend, you know. Yeah. So if there's something that you're in town, and when we get all this going, we finally get some beers produced on the system, you know, if you can't make it that weekend, if you're out of town or something like that, there's a good chance it'll be on the next weekend or maybe the following weekend. So not that you got to rush on down or cancel plans to try a beer, you know. So we're going to have a little bit more that'll and stuff will be on a little bit longer. So
is that going to change your lead time? I mean, because it's more, or is it going to be better for the in-house kind of, are you going to be able to be as free to make what you want, or is there going to have to be more planning that goes?
Well, I mean, I think that we're going to have to see how quickly things go. But you know, in all honesty, if we do a 10 barrel batch of beer, and we can always sell some of that out to our distributor for, you know, counts that are, you know, good for us, or put, you know, a palette of something that we really like out there, you know. Cool. So there's definitely, you know, the options for that. And so we're kind of got to get brewing on it before we can really determine how exactly that's going to work. But I think we have about four taps that are going to be rotating types of beer, but within a certain concept, you know, like locally inspired or Belgian style and that kind of thing. And they'll change. And I'm sure with each season, you know, we might, you know, play around with certain things. So we might do like a pumpkin beer or something like that if it's fall, and that might take the place of one of those things, or use local pumpkin or something like that and make it a, when they're in that locally inspired idea. So I think that's kind of the idea at this point, but honestly, we have, you know, we can kind of do what we want, and so we'll see where it goes. Right now I like to get everything up and running. Yeah. And actually start brewing on it, since I think that would make things make me feel a little bit more at ease. It would be nice to get, you know, some 10 barrels of good stuff that we would normally consider R&D that, you know, we'd only get, you know, a half a barrel of beer out of. So I think it'll be fun. And we got a cache of really great recipes, and, you know, we'll still work on the little tippy system every now and then when we want to do something new and want to try and branch out, or want to do like a really small local collaboration with, you know, a local chef or local people, you know, that kind of thing. Yes, exactly.
You know, I'm thinking we got a big episode round number coming up. I think mm-hmm. that would be a lot of fun to go do a special beer.
I've actually already talked to my employer about that. So
I may have talked to him about it as well.
All right, very good.
So I may do it on a regular basis, and it's not paying off. But hey, you have more clout with it than I do. Oh, we're not brewing beer. We're not drinking beer. We are running off the calories. And I know that Raymond's been running because I get text notifications whenever he goes out for a run. How's that, creeper?
I actually haven't gone out running in the last week. I've been having some foot pain, so I've been relaxing a little bit.
Oh, putting the feet up.
Yeah.
When he's not flooding out his studio, he's resting his feet.
This is the inspiring part of our show, where we really get people out there pounding the pavement. I've been running more and more, and I want to give a really quick Brew Drink Run weather announcement. This past week was pretty nice in the mornings, you know, at sunrise. It's that time of year again, guys, when the sun's rising later and later. So you don't have to get up that early to run first thing. And it's been really nice. So this week has been a lot of back-to-back runs, which I haven't done in a long time. So Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday were all run days.
Good for you.
And then on all those days, I'm also trying to do a little bit of yoga. And I think that's making a big difference. My job, I sit in a chair all day long. And I do have one of those convertible desks that stands. And so I can kind of go back and forth. Yeah. But it's still, I'm just getting a lot of pressure in my upper back. And that's also someplace I feel it a lot when I run, too. Just trying to have good posture and that sort of thing. So it's been good. I am still nowhere near, like, my real running shape. Like, if I were to aggressively run a 5K, I would probably die. You know? I would finish it. And I could non-aggressively run one.
Yeah.
But if I was actually trying to do well, that would be awful. So I want to at least get back there. I really, at one time, I loved running 10Ks. I would like to get back to where I felt good about running 10Ks.
It's a good distance.
Yeah, I always felt good about that distance. A half marathon is totally doable, and you really feel like you accomplished something, but it's not fun to train for one of those. And the people who train for full marathons and can do that, or for longer runs, hey, Matt, we're talking about you, do them on the regular. That takes a special kind of a person. That is not me. But it's been good. It's been good to get back out there. It's good to feel like I'm making some small improvements, because it's better than what it has been, which has been a slow slide to oblivion. So that has been good. I do need to get out and get fitted for a new pair of shoes. I feel like I'm still having that heel strike, and I feel like I need to go to a zero drop, or to a different kind of drop in my shoe, a lower drop, lesser drop, maybe even a lighter weight shoe. Who knows? Who knows? Like, who knows?
Who knows?
And what about reading? There's a leisure time activity that will help you learn things you'd like to know about many subjects.
Raymond's Book Corner.
It's that time of the show where Keith gets up and walks away, and I ask Raymond what he's been reading. Raymond's Book Corner. You can find out more about this book by going to our website, clicking on this episode's show notes. There you can find a link to buy the book at Amazon.com. We get a little kickback if you do that. Or if you like listening to things like podcasts, you might like audiobooks. This is a book that's going to be so good, you can listen to a celebrity read it to you. Go to audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun. Your mileage may vary. There may not be a celebrity that reads this book. Raymond, what's your pick for the week?
Well, I have been thinking about the homebrew stuff again. So I've been looking at the beer making shelf when I go to the bookstore lately. And I picked up one recipe book the last time I was in the store. It's called Make Some Beer. So no exclamation point there or anything. So it's not quite a directive yet. By Erica Shea and Stephen Valland. And they are the founders of the Brooklyn Brew Shop. So it's their recipe book. They also throw in some foodie recipes, things you know where you can use the malts that were left over from the...
Oh, that's fine.
But I picked it up. It's small batch recipes from Brooklyn to Bamberg. So they go through, they went on a big, huge trip when they were preparing to open the brew shop, and traveled all over Europe looking for inspiration for recipes and that sort of thing. And these are some of their highlights kind of from the trip, plus a few things that they picked up along the way. And I mainly picked it up because there was a Goza recipe in there, and I'd never seen a Goza recipe in a book before.
And you immediately said, I'm not making this.
Yeah, I did. I read it, got home, sat down and read the recipe, and realized it was a three-week process, keeping malts like at a temperature, oven temperature for 3 weeks, and I'm just not going to, I can't invest that kind of time and effort into it.
Well, if you want to make some beer, you can pick up the book, Make Some Beer. There's probably not a version of this on Audible, but hey, brewdrinkrun.com. Check this episode for the show notes. Check the site for this episode. Show notes. Click the link to buy it at Amazon.com. We would appreciate it, and we would like to hear your review. So let us know what you think about it. We'll be right back. Tasting, our glasses are out. Keith is making pours. It looks dark. It looks mysterious. Keith, what is it?
Today we have for our grand tasting the Eight Wired Brewing Company's Sour Side of the Moon. This is a barrel-aged sour dark ale, vintage 2014, according to the label. And this is aged for more than a year in Pinot Noir barrels. So we got a white wine barrel, sour, dark beer.
All right. Did you say 2014 on this?
2014.
Got it. So I was looking it up really quickly, and this seems to be the year that it was made. All right. So I don't think this is something they either keep making, you have continued to make, or not. But in the product name, it has the year listed, say on the 8 Wired website. They call it the 2014. So
okay. So this is it. So this is interesting. So I picked this up locally here recently. Went to our local Habersham Beverage, one of our favorite package stores to go to. And our good friend Vince, who's been on our show a few times, he sold me on a bottle of this and many other things I hadn't intended to buy. So I don't go in to see Vince as often as I did used to because I don't have as much money.
Back off, Vince.
Yeah, no, but he did a really good job on this trip. He pointed me to a couple of things that I didn't know that they had, or you know, was nice enough to pull out some of those rare, harder to find things for me. And this one was just sitting on the shelf, so. I didn't pay that close attention. I was like, oh, this sounds good. And so I was curious about when I pulled it out of the fridge today about the year on it, or when I put it in the fridge. It doesn't really matter. Because I was like, all right, so in 2017, I bought a 2014 bottle. Where has this been for the past? So I didn't know if it was something that was barreled in 2014 and released in 2016, late 16 or 17 or something.
It was added to Beer Advocate in May of 2015.
May of 2015. So, okay, so that makes sense. It was aged a year, it said on the bottle. So they put 2014 on the labels for the, I guess, the time the beer was brewed. And it was released in 2014 some or 15 sometimes, but still doesn't account for the 2 years that this has been around. Now maybe
it's from New Zealand. Yeah, it took that long.
Maybe
it's really far away.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and you know, this is I think Shelton Brothers, should we say, and they're super into their beer and their import stuff. And who knows? Maybe they chose to sit on some of these and sell them later. Maybe. They just were sitting around and not selling, and people have picked up on it now. Who knows? It doesn't really matter. I think that a barrel-aged sour is probably going to be fine after 3 years anyways, but we'll find out.
Raymond, what does this bottle look like? What size is it? It's one of those between sizes.
It's a pint. 0.9 fluid ounces. What is that?
375 milliliters, okay. Probably equates close to that, yeah.
Okay.
All right, now what does the label look like? It's a bottle, we've established that. It's a 375 milliliter bottle. What is the label like?
All right, so overall the label is kind of just this dark label, kind of a gray with a dark linear drawing on top of it, but the distinctive aspect of the label is the text. Which is Sour Side of the Moon, but it's kind of in a rainbow prism coloration, big font, lots of color on it, so it stands out against the otherwise gray label.
Clearly a Pink Floyd reference there with the rainbow prism and both the name. I mean, that's pretty easy correlation. So,
yep. And as I mentioned, Keith has poured this into glasses. So. What is this style? This style, is it an old brewing?
I don't know. It doesn't say. It just says sour dark ale. So maybe your Beer Advocate or Untappd or one of those should help you decide what at least they categorize.
Yeah, so Beer Advocate calls it a Flanders Old Brewing.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But I read, I think it was on the 8 Wired site. Let me see if I can pull that back up. Because they called it something... That I was like, what now? Say what now? What now? Let's see what they call it. Never mind. They just called it a barrel-aged sour dark ale. Yeah. That wasn't interesting. That wasn't what it was. I saw it someplace, and I was like, that looks interesting. And here it's called a sour red or brown. Okay. All right. So, it's dark.
Yep.
It looks like a cola. It's got that aspect. It's got the along the edges, kind of that brownish, clear... caramelly look, even kind of has a head on it that looks very similar to a Coke.
Man, you're just like talking about heads a lot today. This is like Raymond's show to talk about like heads on beers. All right. Look, I'm giving drama. People like the drama.
This is such a dramatic
people
podcast.
Like the drama.
All right. It smells great. I haven't had this style in a while, and I'm really looking forward to it now. I don't drink sour beers just that often by myself. I mean, they definitely for me, there's something to be shared. There's something nice about the communal aspect because it's not average, everyday drinking beer. And it's something I like talking through the experience with people drinking these because very rarely is it just one thing.
I mean, I've certainly tackled, especially when I was writing a beer review every day, I would end up tackling bottles I shouldn't. And there is something about trying to drink, you know, most sour ales on your own. There are some that are a little sweeter and a little bit easier, and Gose's have enough complexity, and they're usually not in a big bottle and that kind of thing that you can do. But in this size bottle, I would certainly be tempted to drink it by myself because it's not a huge bottle. But I agree. I think that drinking sour ales is much more interesting in a company of people who particularly enjoy them, because they're going to have constructive things other than ooh, just gross. So, you know.
Quick correction for earlier. This is a 500 milliliter bottle. 500
Oh, 500, okay.
And the remark I saw about it was on metabeer.com. They call it a Flanders Black, which I had never seen.
Okay.
Flanders Red, you see. Heard, but yeah, Flanders I say quotation red. Mark, so yeah. I think it's just being like, it's right. Flanders, but it's dark. So, all right. The aroma on this. So you don't necessarily get the sour, like, but you do get...
I think it's in there.
I mean, if you didn't, I get
a sour in like a cherry kind of way,
a dark cherry, like a currant kind of a thing, but with a little bit, but not.
I don't know. I get a little bit of vinegar. In
do you?
This. Yeah, okay. Just a little bit.
I don't get the astringency. Yeah, I don't get the nail polish remover. I don't get the big.
No, it's not. It's not a huge. It's not a huge like face peel, like nose peeler in that. Instant.
Some vinegar.
Yeah, there's a little bit of
cidery kind of vinegar thing. Yeah. Okay. Definitely. You guys go ahead and take a little sip. I'm avoiding dead air. I'm really good at that. First thoughts?
Well, at first, the idea of calling this a Flanders Old Bruin, I think, makes sense, because I get some of that vinegary kind of cherry fruit. But then there is this little almost roasty, dry, cocoa-y kind of thing that goes on in the middle, and then it kind of goes back into that more traditional thing. This is interesting. Now, none of us had this 2 years ago when it first appeared in social media. So it's hard to say what time has done to it versus what it should have been. So, or is.
So dry. So very, the finish on this, there's just not, it doesn't leave you with a lot in terms of the, it coats really well. It's, I feel like you described the flavors pretty well. I'm getting a lot of those same notes, but there's something about how it finishes for me that's very different.
I think I know what it is.
You do? What is it?
Oxidation.
Yeah,
it's that cardboard papery taste that's going on the end. I think that's what's happening. I think it might have been a little bit juicier, fruitier finish, and I think now we're getting this kind of dry, papery finish. So I think this probably over time has become a little oxidized.
Yeah, and the things that can cause that, I mean, it could have been a capping issue or just not purged, the bottle wasn't purged.
I mean, I think there's naturally going to be some amount of air. I mean, no matter how perfectly you try and make something not have oxygen, I mean, the beer already has oxygen in it. I mean, you know, you try and have your levels be as low as possible, but no matter how perfect you try and be, you're still going to have at least... you know, some amount of parts per billion of oxygen in there. And the longer those small parts per billion sit, the longer they're going to start to affect the beer. And if there was more, and depending on, I mean, I don't know what their bottling line is like.
Yeah.
So it was one, and it's, I mean, a lot of great beers that I've had that are aged, you can taste a little bit of that oxidation. This one seems a little bit more than a little.
And for a beer that's relatively young.
Yeah, you know, for a couple of years,
If this was something that had been in a cellar for 10 years, 15 years, that's much more likely. You would be like, oh, well, there's a good chance that this may have certain things that happen to it. But with one that's this relatively young, it's a little bit surprising. Now, that oxidation doesn't make this beer undrinkable or anything.
No.
It is, but it is a, you're exactly right. That's 100% what it is. It's a papery, cardboardy finish that is... most definitely cost because of that.
Yeah, I mean, it affects the drinking experience to some extent. I mean, I think that what's here is pretty good. I think that what we're really missing is the barrel in all of this at the moment, and maybe some of that dryness is coming from that as well. But I don't feel like I'm getting anything that I would attribute to like Pinot Noir, which is a kind of like a really juicy kind of wine, really fruity. There's some fruit elements in here, but I don't feel like they're like through the roof or anything like that.
And I'm not enough of a wine drinker to even pretend to, you know, it's Pinot Noir is a dark wine, like grapey.
It's a little grapey.
I don't know anything about it. So, like, obviously, whatever I would be putting in this is completely wrong. Raymond, what about you? Is that oxidation something you detect or no?
I get it now that you've talked about it, but before I just kind of attributed it to that. At one point, you said cocoa, and that cocoa flavor. And, you know, when you eat, like, cocoa powder, it's got that dryness to it, and then the flavor kind of ceases for me. And I was totally putting it there, and it was all part of that cocoa-y kind of flavor. And it doesn't bother me. I mean, I totally get kind of wet cardboard now at the end.
Well, that kind of cocoa-y thing, I mean, there is this little... Well, that's what kind of makes this beer interesting to me is the fact that they don't call it any kind of specific kind of beer. It is just kind of a tart, sour-esque dark beer. And it's got some dark beer character. It also does carry some of those, you know, Flanders-style, you know, red things as well. But there is this sort of dark beer element that's going on in this thing, whether it's like a kind of like a cocoa or just like a little bit of roasty dark flavor that comes in kind of towards the middle of the taste for me.
All right, I think it's time that we get a fourth opinion on this. It's time for Beer Review Theater.
To beer or not to beer, it's time for Beer Review Theater.
Okay, it's the time where we turn to the real experts, the internet, to find out the real deal on this beer. Today, we are drinking 8 Wired Brewing Company's Sour Side of the Moon, a Flanders Black, if you will.
That's actually not a bad term.
It's not bad.
That kind of works.
I kind of like it. Today's review comes from Intransitive, one of the reviewers over on Beer Advocate. Intransitive's profile picture is a really cute dog.
Aww.
He's real cute. He's a white dog, has little black eyes and a little black nose. He's shaggy.
Shaggy.
That's it. I'm not good with dogs or wine. That's all I have. I don't know what it is. Intransitive did not like this beer. I think that it will become obvious from the review, and I will save his numbers for the end. I will be doing this as Intransitive.
Can you tell
dog.
Us when this was posted? Just ahead of time, so we know.
Yeah, this was posted June 24th, 2017. So at this recording, recently, a couple months ago.
Ruff. Poured from a bottle. Dated 2014. Ruff. Purchased from craft beer seller. Into a palm glass. Ruff. Oh boy. What went wrong here? Maybe these beers aren't supposed to be aged. Maybe I got a bad batch. Something went wrong in transit from the other side of the planet. Or maybe this is a bad beer. The latter option would be surprising and disappointing considering the other sour beers I've had from this brewer, which were quite good. Deep brown, maroon color. Not much lacing or head. Odd, off-putting chemical smell at first. Taste was spoiled fruit. Astringent chemical and rot. I've read this beer described as a Flemish red, but that's not what it came out of my bottle. More noxious than sour. I had 2 more sips just to make sure my initial impression was correct. Then I poured it down the drain.
Intransitive gave it a 1.63 out of 5.
Good boy, by the way. Good boy.
Thanks, man. It's a look of 3.25, a smell of 2, a taste of 1, a feel of 3, 1.63 out of 5.
I get it. I think that I don't love this. I'm certainly not going out and buying another one. If you have one, I would probably just go ahead and drink it. But you know what? It's interesting because I was thinking to myself, well, maybe it was a bad cap or something like that. There are those issues, but this kind of confirms that there's more of this going on than maybe not, you know? So
the overall Beer Advocate score is 373 out of 5. Okay. And the more positive reviews are the earlier reviews.
There you go. All right. Okay. So
there you have it.
There's facts.
Sour Side of the Moon from
Proven
Wired Brewing Company. If Vince tries to pressure you to buy a bottle, just do it. Make your beer guy happy. if there's one person you want to make happy other than your significant other, it's your beer guy. Yeah. So obviously take care of your beer guy.
Which I just screwed that all up.
Whoops. Hey, he's not bad. He sold that bottle. It's gone.
Yeah, I don't know how many he's got left.
Hey, I'm sure this is the only one that
I'm sure every beer drinker in Savannah listens to this podcast too, right?
All six of us. And Intransitive was one of us. I will find out later. It was one of our six Savannah beer listeners. Oh, well. So to wrap up today, we had all the boys from Baharami. I think I said it right this time. Yes. I'm not looking at it this time, so I think that's pretty much what it is. Out of Asheville. Interesting find. Again, if you are in Asheville, I don't think it goes much further outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely look for their stuff. The Lorelei IPA is also really good. It's got to be good for me to have traveled on a trip and bought an IPA to bring home.
There you go.
You know, we have access to so many good IPAs. Yeah. Like, why? But it was really good. So I brought some of those back. And Molly's Lips, their Black Goza, named after the Nirvana song. Is that a cover, Molly's Lips? I can't remember if that was the one they covered.
I don't know. It certainly could be.
Yeah. All right. I just don't want to seem like, oh, I just know the Nirvana
song. It doesn't come off like a song Nirvana would write, but yeah, they do a good cover if it is one. So.
Hey, I'm on board with that.
Yeah.
That's good. Thanks for saving me there. All right. For more about us and Brew Drink Run, go to brewdrinkrun.com. Follow us on Twitter at brewdrinkrun or on Facebook at facebook.com/brewdrinkrun. Plus, we're all on Untappd. If you want to be a part of the show, email us at team@brewdrinkrun.com. Let us know about your home brewing, your running training, or your favorite place to grab a beer. You can also call us at 781-76-DRINK, 781-763-7465. If you do that, you just might hear yourself on the show. We've got Brew Drink Run t-shirts and technical running shirts available on our website. Click the store link. Our theme music is provided by Morning Lights. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you out there somewhere. Cheers.
Cheers.
So the secret to a good clink, gentlemen, is you still have half your glass left. You finally figured it out after 182 episodes.
Molly's Lips was originally the Vaseline's.
Vaseline's. I knew it had to be. Not had to be. It felt like a cover. Felt like a cover.